You're the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari, Season 1, Episode 34. Hi, I'm Randy Cantrell. Welcome to the Year of the Peer Podcast with Leo Battari. This podcast is based on a simple truth. Who you surround yourself with matters. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari will interview thought leaders from all walks of life who will share how they leverage peer advantage and show you how engaging your peers more purposefully can hold the key to greater success in business and in life. Today's guest is Benji Higham. Benji is a co-founder of Grow and Convert, a fully done-for-you content marketing agency, and Wordable.io, a SaaS app that imports blog posts from Google Docs to WordPress. Previously, he ran marketing at two venture-backed startups in San Francisco. We welcome Benji to the show.
Benji Higham, welcome to Year of the Peer. I'm so thrilled to have you here. It's been a long time, really, since we've been in the same space. Of course, for people in the audience here, Benji and I used to work together at Vistage. And when Benji left Vistage, to start his own venture and quite frankly, to do a lot of amazing things since we worked together full time, just was really excited to be able to have you here, talk about a lot of the people and the experiences you've had that influenced you and kind of what you're doing now, because I know in terms of the work you're doing at Grow and Convert, it's been really exciting and a real outcome of a lot of the things you've done earlier in your career. So Benji, if you could just tell everyone just a little bit about you, just a little background about who you are and all that, and we'll get rolling from there.
Yeah, so I have two companies, both that I'm a co-founder in. One is a marketing agency, specifically in content marketing agency. So we do full service, everything from doing intensive user research with a company to figure out who the best company to target is. Then we figure out the best content to write for that company that will attract their target customer back to their website. We promote articles for them so we can build that traffic, and then we help convert their traffic on their website to customers. Then the second business is a SaaS application. In the same space. So when we were growing our blog and working with a lot of companies, what we realized was it was always a challenge to write a blog post in, let's say, Google Docs and then have to copy and paste everything into WordPress. And so we created a software tool that moves a fully formatted blog post from Google Docs into WordPress to make it easier for content teams to publish.
Nice.
Yep. Previously, I'd run marketing at two different startups in San Francisco. I had a short stint doing my own agency for the first time back in 2013, I believe. And that was right after I had left Vistage. And I had worked at Vistage for almost 3 years, doing social media, paid advertising, managing the blog. And that's how we first got connected.
That's right. So we'll take our coffee sips. When I think about the work you were doing at Vistage, which was really great. I mean, obviously you had a real talent for being able to do what you're doing. We started that Executive Street blog at the time. I loved, posting. And I had started actually blogging, interestingly enough, back in 2006 when I was at Hill & Knowlton. And they had a blog at the time called Collective Conversations. And one of the things was, I remember going to a client meeting one time, and I had been doing PR for 20 years or so, and next thing they're talking about all the social media stuff and everything and some of the various tools, and I was feeling woefully like just about trying to keep up with that conversation. And I remember feeling as if this is something that I need to dive into myself, not just try to learn about it from the outside. So I remember starting the blog. First of all, I'd spent a lot of time just looking at everybody else's stuff and then started a blog. I posted every single day for 6 straight months, only to learn, too, that where I thought I was behind, I was actually the first U.S. blogger from Hill & Knowlton to participate in that site because the folks are from the U.K. and Australia, and we had somebody from Portugal. And so it was kind of neat, but you know, until you get in it, you know, you really don't know what it's all about. But I will say this, that, you know, even with that experience and the fact that I've been doing it for over 10 years, you know, I struggle like a lot of people, I think, with trying to get the eyeballs. You know, you work really hard on this content, you want to get it out there and you want a lot of people to see it. Yeah. And, you know, it's not always easy.
It's not easy. I think the challenge that most companies have is they try to build their own audience. And so they'll try to build up their Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn accounts, and then they just share the content in those places. And so you only have a limited amount of views. I think what we've learned over the years is the best way to get in front of people is to tap into someone's audience who's already built it. And so instead of reinventing the wheel and building your own audience, what we really do is figure out where a company's target customers are already hanging out online. Someone's already done the work to build a community somewhere. So for example, there's a bunch of Facebook groups, let's say about, if we take Vistage, for example, there's a bunch of CEOs that participate in Facebook groups to learn from each other. Or there might be LinkedIn groups around CEOs and leadership and things like that, where you know the right audience exists. And so after you create content, the goal is to do a bunch of research and look for these groups where your target audience already exists and then share your content in those places. That way you know that you're attracting the right visitors back to your website, and you'll have a higher chance of converting those people to customers or readers or whatever the end goal is for whatever you're trying to do.
Well, it's funny. It is fish where the fish are, right? I mean, you find out, you just find out where they are and you go do that. That's a big help. Now, I will say though that, you know, I know you've had a lot of influences in your life, everybody from your dad to people that you've met along the way that have kind of got you to this place where you not only have developed an interest, but a real expertise in what you do. Tell us a little bit about how some of the people you've gotten to meet over your, you know, short life, I will say so far, yeah, have kind of shaped what you're doing right now.
Yeah. So I like to, I think of it in two ways, actually. So there's the people who've kind of inspired me and pushed me to do something better. And then there's the people, potentially bosses or people in the workplace who've actually had the opposite effect, who I didn't really agree with the way that they led or managed. But then that's actually shaped a lot of how I treat the opposite way that I treat employees, or what I expect out of a workplace. So I'll touch on, I guess, the positive people first. So I think a big influence, I think, for me, the one who started me to write, was actually Gina. So Gina was my boss for a while at Vistage. And I remember it was right after I'd taken over the Executive Street blog, and I was managing writers, but she really pushed me to write an article. And for me, writing is not something that I'm really passionate about. I wouldn't even say it's my core strength. I think for me, what pushes me and drives me to write a lot is teaching. I enjoy teaching and helping people accomplish something. And so I think even in my writing, a lot of that comes through. But I remember she just challenged me to write one article for the blog, and I kept putting it off for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And she's just like, you just need to write something. And so I ended up writing about Snuggies. This is back in 2010, and how Snuggies were this new phenomenon that everyone was buying, and it was this hit trend. And I remember just publishing it, and I think I got something like 300 readers at the time. And I was like, wow, 300 people care about what I have to say. This is amazing. And I think that's kind of what got me hooked on the writing thing. And then when I was doing a lot of the training work for Vistage and traveling to go speak to the groups of CEOs to help them with their social media, then we had this other challenge where a lot of my time was taken up traveling. And so I wrote an article basically outlining what I taught in the presentation, and that one got 20,000 visitors. And I just remember thinking at the time, it's crazy that you can write a single article and make an impact on that many people. It's like, even if you were to go into a room and speak to people in person, oftentimes your audience is only 100, 200, 500 people. And by writing, I can hit so many more people from all over the world, different countries, different interests. And I thought that was really fascinating for me. So that's kind of
what we have a visitor. Hi there. See, who you surround yourself with matters here. All right, buddy. Everything's all good. All right, let's get you down. All right. So yeah. You never know what's going to happen on the show. But exactly. So anyway, it's my dog, Argus. My other dog, Hildy, is over there, but she's just chilling. But I think that's very true. I think the idea, two things. One, you know, you kind of figure out pretty quickly that I could sit and write an article in the comfort of my own home. And if I get it out, I don't have to travel to like 19 cities in order to reach the same number of people, right? I mean, there's no question about that. I think on the writing thing, though, I hope that one of the things you've discovered and one of the things that I've always admired about you is you do have real clarity of thought. You're a thoughtful guy. And I think when you consider what makes people a good writer, it isn't so much about being a professional writer, so to speak, or being a perfect grammarian. But when you're clear about what it is you want to say, think about editorials in the newspaper years ago or comments people write on blog posts oftentimes where when they're passionate about something, I mean, it's powerful and it's good. And they're not professional writers. They just have a clarity of an idea that they want to communicate. To your point, you want to either teach or you just want to share, if you will, with others. And I think that's what makes you a good writer, you know, and it makes you, and you could even argue better than that, a good communicator. And I think that's, you know, in the end, people want that. You know, one of the things that I've always tried to avoid, even though I'll do them every once in a while, and I know they're great clickbait and everything when people write content, but I hate these articles that are like 3 ways to do this, 5 ways to accomplish that, you know, 10 secrets to success. I think they should all come with a warning label. I think every...
I would agree. So that's something.
Or just
something
like,
that we don't push at all. So listicle posts. We will never be caught writing one ever. I think the key thing when it comes to writing for us is to tell interesting stories. That's what really drives people. People want to learn from other people. People want to learn from other people's experiences. And I think this is kind of going away from the original question, but even when we first started our site right now and our company, one thing that we noticed when we were thinking about how to differentiate ourselves in the content marketing space. So if you think back in 2015, when we started this company, content marketing was mainstream at this point. So I think when I had started back in 2010, companies were really starting to pay attention to it, starting to invest in it. But there was still a huge gap in the market. There was companies knew it was important, but they weren't allocating resources at the point at that point for a large part. And then by 2015, when we decided to start this company, you now had every company investing in content marketing, publishing blogs, and the challenge changed where it wasn't about just taking part in the conversation now. It was really how do you stand out from the crowd. And so because there was this flood of information, the challenge became curating the highest quality content or producing the highest quality content just instead of just putting stuff out there. And so when we looked at the space, we saw a lot of the content marketing blogs who are already really big, really just talking about high level theory and just trying to explain things in kind of an abstract point of view. And so we really saw this opportunity to share real stories, real experiences, and real case studies. And that's what we really used to hook our readership and go into a lot more depth in terms of how you actually execute on this stuff, the in-depth strategy instead of the high-level stuff. And I think that's what's really stood out. And I think even so, for companies that are investing in content today or want to get into this space, I still think a lot of this is true, that if you look at a lot of the industries, there, a lot of these companies are still producing the 5 tips to do this and 10 ways to do that. And I think if you just bring real stories and real examples from your customer base and from real world situations, I think it puts you on a different caliber and people connect with that type of content way more than just the stuff that drives eyeballs and clicks.
You know, it's so interesting, and I want to, of course, I'll get back to Gina and some of the other people, but, you know, it's so funny how everything kind of just brings us back. You know, when we think about oral tradition and storytelling, we think about folk tales, and we think about all of the things that, you know, are just such a, you know, a big part of just how we engage with other people. It's really, really powerful and remains so. That none of that really goes away. But you know, you brought up Gina. One of the things that was great about her is Gina was not, by the way, hurting for the number of people to write articles. She had a lot of people to draw from to do that. She, I think, challenged you to do that because she believed in you and kind of took you out of your comfort zone a little bit, because left to your own devices, you might very well, we might still be waiting for that first article, right? If someone didn't kind of continually challenge you and get you out of your comfort zone with that, you know, that's probably not ever going to happen. So in addition to Gina, who are some of the other people that you think have kind of shaped some things for you and some of the direction? And with that, too, I also want to talk about a pretty amazing trip you took to Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I'll talk about all that stuff.
Bit of a personal discovery journey for you, right?
Yeah. So at Vistage, I think there are a lot of people. So I think you and Jeff, I think, from an executive level standpoint, I remember this really early on. So I joined Vistage when I think I was 22. So I had 6 months left to graduate in college, yet I was still working full time. And I remember just really, there was this thoughtful approach to figuring out what I wanted to do long term in my career. And I remember this exercise that we did where it was stepping stones, and you wanted to map out your 3 to 5 to 10 year goals career wise. And I remember the aha moment was one, the advice was to look at a role that you wanted to be in 3 to 5 years, and then go find a job description online for that role and see what skill sets were really missing in order to be able to take on this role. And I remember doing the exercise, and I kind of had this aha moment where at the time, I think I was a social media coordinator. It was my first title. And then I moved into manager, and I knew I wanted to run marketing at a company at some point. And I remember looking at the skill sets needed in order to get there and just realizing all the gaps that I had. And so the next big person who influenced the change on that was Dominic. So Dominic ended up taking over as the team lead for our team, and knowing where I wanted to go long term, he was he basically was able to cross-train me in some of the work that I didn't really know at the time. So at the time, my specialty was in social media and content. And he cross-trained me in SEO and paid advertising and all these skills that I needed to build in order to get to that level in the career that I wanted. And so that really had a big influence on my career, I think. Now looking back on some of the roles that I had afterwards, where I did go to San Francisco and ended up running marketing for companies, I don't think I would have gotten those roles unless the team at Vistage had proactively looked at where I wanted to go in my career and helped me prepare for that kind of stuff. And so looking back on that experience, I think I really appreciate just kind of that forward thinking and just people taking me under their wing at such a young age. You could look at like some 22-year-old millennial and just kind of just say, oh, this person is young. They still have so much to learn. Like, let's just like let them do what they want. But I think there was really this great like proactive approach to really helping people clarify what they want in their career and in their life long term. And so I really appreciated that.
Well, I don't think anyone missed also that, you wanted to learn and you didn't care about the fact that, you didn't look at the people who are 20 and 30 years older than you as, I think really tried to look for, the good and what people could share, with you. And, everyone's got different skill sets and everything to bring to the table, but I think taking you out of your comfort zone there, what Gina did, I think was really powerful. Then of course you left Vistage and you said you started your own agency. You did that for a while. And, that's one of those things, you try it and, I'm sure you got some really good experiences from that, but then also, and certainly invite you to talk about that experience, but also I was blown away actually by kind of what you did from there in terms of the, you left the country for a while and I just really felt like, you know, Benji's on some personal, you know, journey of discovery here to figure out, you know, what you want out of your life, and not, and I think it was beyond professional. And so I'd love for you to share some of that, and what inspired you to actually do that, or who may have inspired you to do that?
Yeah. So we'll go back to that in a second, but. So really...
Ah, yes. My dog's barking at somebody. Can you hear that badly or no? You go ahead. I'm going to mute myself. Go ahead.
Okay. So the first company, I think, going back to people. So I had taken someone from Vistage and started the company with them. And I think it was a really good experience for me learning how to work with other people. So I had taken someone who was a peer inside of the company and then started a company with them. And I think the big learning experience, we only ran the company for about 6 months, even though she still runs it today, was that you really need to surround yourself with people who have complementary skills instead of the same thing. So I think the biggest challenge in running that company was that we were too similar and we couldn't divide and conquer and split each other's roles and focus on different aspects of the business. And so I'm glad I learned that quickly and realized that early on, because I think that's, it's a big challenge. And contrasting where I'm at today, I have a partner who has the exact opposite skills in every single way. And I think that balance works really well now. And it was something that I was actively conscious of and looking for when I started my next business. But after that, so after I started that first business and I left doing that, I went up to San Francisco, ran marketing at a company called ThinkApps. I was the fourth person inside of the company. And that was a really interesting experience too, working with a small team, tackling a big challenge. And then did really well there. We grew their blog to 35,000 monthly uniques in 6 months. And that ended up being the biggest driver of leads in the company. And then at the time, it was about a year into my role there, I got poached by another company there. And so in hindsight, it seemed like an amazing opportunity, mostly because the salary increase was massive. The investors in the company were also really big. And so I was kind of blinded by money and like status, and I figured, oh, well, if I take this job and do really well, now these large venture capital firms will see me and it'll advance opportunities into other areas. And I didn't really do enough due diligence on the company at the time, and so going into that role, I had completely different expectations going into it than what the role was in actuality. And my boss and I just butted heads in every single way possible. So he was somewhat of a micromanager. And I think this is a lot, this whole experience. And when I said there's people that influence you in certain ways, positive or negative too, it was just a really negative experience. I was working 12 to 15 hour days, stressed out, was just like on Sunday nights, just dreading going into work the next day. And I just realized that was a big problem because I was just unhappy. And so I think at that time I had this kind of realization. So early on in my career, I always wanted to get to this point in my career to where I was running marketing, making a good amount of money, working in San Francisco or like a company that was progressive. And then I kind of got all those things and just realized how unhappy I was. And so that was a big aha moment for me. And at the time, I'd interviewed at maybe 5 or 7 different companies trying to get out of that situation. And for one reason or another, all of the roles just kept falling through. Like I'd get to the final round and then they're like, oh, we're actually not going to hire for this role anymore. Or they chose someone else and I was just getting kind of discouraged. And it was at this time where I just went to a random marketing dinner and I'd met my now business partner. Over an argument over dinner, we just started challenging each other on content marketing. And then I ended up starting a company with him. But the whole the whole traveling piece came out of this. It was just, I was super burnt out, and I just felt like I'd kind of sacrificed everything else in my life for work. And so, like, ended a relationship, moved to a new city, stopped surfing for 2 years, which is, and at the time, I remember it was my last, it was this one job interview that pushed me over the edge, where it was this role for organic content promotion. So being able to drive traffic to blog posts without paying for anything. And I felt like I was the perfect person for this job. There was no one better at this than me. And I went into the interview, and I had just started my site maybe 3 weeks before. And when they were asking for examples of things that I'd done, I was sharing a lot of the stats from our site, and I was really passionate about that. And I remember leaving the interview feeling really confident because I knew this space really well. And then about a week later, I got rejected from the role. And I was like, I don't get how I could be rejected. I know I'm a better candidate than anyone else out there. And when I asked for feedback, they said that I seem more passionate about my company now than I did about the role. And all the examples that I had used were from that, from the site that I had started. And so after that experience, it just got me thinking. I said, well, if this is something that I'm really passionate about, and that is true, I was more passionate about the site than the job that I was applying for. I said, it just flipped the situation. I said, well, how do I work on this then? Like, how can I make this happen? And at the time, I had already booked a 2 week trip to Bali. And I was talking to a friend that was traveling and kind of doing the digital nomad thing. And she said, like, why don't you just come out here and work on it? There's tons of people. And I was like, I can do that. There's no way. Like, I can't leave San Francisco. I can't leave the money. Like, I can't leave all this stuff and then take a chance on a site that wasn't making any money at this point. And then I kept thinking about it, and I was like, well, this is really what I do want to do. I know I'm passionate about this. I love working on this every day. And so it just flipped to where I was like, okay, how can I make this happen? And so I didn't have like barely any money in savings. And I just tried to figure it out. I had a two month window from that time where I'd made the decision to kind of do this. And then to the time my plane took off. And I just started thinking about things differently. I sold my car. I got out of my lease, and then there was a security deposit in there. I was like, oh, okay, well, I also have my tax return for the year. And then started figuring out ways to have money add up, sold all of my possessions, and just kind of went all in on it. And knew that I would have about 5 months burn to make something happen when I was traveling. And that was kind of how I ended up traveling. I had always wanted to take a year off and travel. Two, I saw this as an opportunity to start the business. And one of the biggest lessons I learned from the first business was that, like, just your living expenses will kill you. So I was living in San Diego, and I think at the time I was spending about $3,000 a month. And I was like, I can't do that again, especially up in San Francisco, way more expensive than being in San Diego. And so I saw going to Asia as a way to lower my burn rate personally, and just have a good experience out of it, and to get away from the high pressure work environment of San Francisco venture-backed startups, and really be able to focus on what I wanted to do. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got started. I think like almost 5 months to the day, I started making my first dollar from our site. And then we went through four different pivots over the last year and a half to end up where we are at today, which is with an agency. So yeah, I think it was a really interesting experience overall. And it's funny how everything kind of comes full circle. I started off at Invistage not knowing anything about content marketing or blogging, and it was one of the first tasks that I was given. And now I run an agency that helps other companies accomplish this for their business. So,
well, one of the things that I like, though, that you shared about that experience, and I'd read this before, is here you are, you've got a business partner, and it started out with you know, like real debate, real argument over all this stuff. And then you probably, you know, never in that moment maybe ended up thinking, oh, let's start a company together, at least in the throes of some of that conversation. But what I love about it is clearly as you were debating, you were listening to each other at the same time. There wasn't this issue of just 100% investment and being right and winning the argument so much as you were. There may have been a bit of that, but you were also taken in, and each of you were taken in your various perspectives. And obviously,
it was debating to help the other person. Yeah. We were challenging each other, trying to get to a better place, and I was trying to help him with his current business, and he was trying to push back, saying he didn't believe me, and really challenging me to help explain things properly. And I think it was that dynamic, and then also realizing that we had both come from different worlds. So I had worked inside of a lot of companies. He had had his own business ever since he graduated from his PhD. And yeah, I think those different perspectives came together. And I think what I was really looking for was someone who did think opposite of me, who did have different experiences, who had opposite skill sets. And it was kind of then when I had that aha moment where we started a blog on content marketing, and that was my core skill set at the time, and it wasn't his, but I still saw so much value in him contributing and him being a part of this project, because he brought the whole left-brained, analytical, process-oriented approach to things when I was the opposite. I was very creative, not process-oriented, and that combination of personalities and skills, I think, really helped our whole business. I don't think I could have done it without him today.
Well, I'm sure the opposite. I'm sure it's vice versa as far as you know, he's concerned. And one of the things I think is oftentimes people are not always open or they're uncomfortable with conflict. And the reality I think is that real healthy conflict that isn't about you know, personal stuff. It isn't about winning. It's about how do we fight for the right solution, the best idea, an approach that, you know, leverages the complementary skill sets that are there, as opposed to having it be against one another. You know, you were having a conflict, but it was you were trying to get somewhere together. Yeah. And I think that that's really powerful. And you know, the more that I think we can do that in our workplaces, that we are comfortable enough and secure enough to have those kinds of conversations that really bring to light really good thinking. It's huge.
I think it's one of the biggest, I think this is one of the biggest challenges we face in the U.S. today. So if you think even politics aside from the workplace, I think we've gotten to a point where people are just discarding opposing viewpoints and are not open to listening to other people's opinions and views. And it's gotten to this point where you just kind of shrug off someone else who doesn't believe the same way as you. And to go back to your point about conflict, I think it's so important. I think we need to have real conversations. I think we need to push each other, because we're all in it for the same thing. We all want to get to a better place. And I think we need to be open to listening and challenging each other and really listen before you give your opinion, because I think so many people are quick to react and are just not open to hearing anyone else's viewpoint. And yeah, I think if we're open and you truly want to argue with someone with the goal of maybe we'll come to a middle ground, or maybe the other person is completely right and I was thinking about this the wrong way, and it can get both of us to a better place. I think if you go into a conversation or a conflict with that mindset, I think it'll end up in a much better place. And I think looking back at that experience before I quit my job, that was a lot of the challenge that I was having from a leadership perspective, is I came into the role with a bunch of expertise in marketing. And then I felt like I had someone who had completely different experiences, who wasn't as well versed in marketing, telling me how to do my job without really listening to what I had to say. And so even from a leadership standpoint, it really pushed me in the opposite direction. And I'm really happy it happened today. But I think going back to the influences, I think it's just so important, regardless of the age in a company or the experience level to just let ideas be heard and kind of and argue through them or just talk through them, have a conversation about these things with the goal of getting to a better outcome.
Well, you know, part of why we tend to do that, we're kind of wired to do that. And I'm not sure that our parents and our society haven't contributed to that pretty greatly when we were younger, right? I brought up in an earlier podcast one time, Randy and I were kind of talking about some various things that we had experienced, you know, throughout the year. And one of them was this idea that, you know, people come together, to your point, no one wants to listen to each other. They're all about wanting to win or whatever. But you remember, I think most of us when we were kids, I certainly was, you know, you were taught that, all right, you can have conversations with people about anything. Stay away from religion and stay away from politics. Well, why would that be? Why wouldn't I want to learn about somebody's politics? Why wouldn't I want to understand somebody's faith and where what that's about? But this idea that somehow it would challenge some core beliefs in a way that wasn't healthy or dangerous, so that it was going to lead to the premise of that conversation is that someone's going to try to prove somebody right as opposed to listening for understanding. So we were never taught really to listen for understanding. We're kind of listening for, you know, what promotes our current belief in the world. And now we get to watch whatever news aligns with our worldview. We get to make decisions, to your point, where we surround ourselves with people that don't have the diversity of thought that we should have in our lives, quite frankly. And I think it's really shut down a lot of conversation, and it doesn't give us the tools to be able to engage in the kind of conversation and dialogue that, even when it becomes conflict, it's okay. You know, there's a learning experience out of it.
Yeah, I wish people would say that, though. I wish, even from like a leadership standpoint in the country right now, that we challenge each other to talk to other people in your community that have opposing viewpoints. Cause I really do think that's what's key here. I think you look at how organizations are set up and we talk about culture and things like that. Oftentimes the wisdom is to attract people who are the same as you or who believe in the same things. And when you surround yourself with people like that, it's not always good. You get groupthink, you have like, no one's willing to stand up to someone else. And I think oftentimes it does more bad than good. And I think we're seeing the same thing on a larger standpoint in the country right now, where people are only siding with their own viewpoints and are not challenging each other. And I wish there was more of a focus on getting people out there to talk to other people, to learn about the people that they may oppose or ideals that they oppose. Because I think in the end, you realize that we're all humans and we're all trying to accomplish similar things. And I think if you just talk to people, you'll realize these things so much easier than just getting this information fed to you or things like that.
So here we are, you know, we're from completely different generations. We grew up with very different influences and all. Yet, I think on this point, we feel exactly the same way about it. And so I guess I'm wondering, so what do we do as individuals, you know, kind of one person at a time to make a difference in the world in that regard, right? How do we try to, you know, encourage people that it's okay, you know, to, and you know, I think maybe we can produce some good content around this and we can get new skills of extending the reach on it, maybe
I agree.
Start, right?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this a lot, actually, over the last month or two. I think it's challenging for me. I think maybe different generations have seen war, have seen more conflict, have seen just a lot more than my generation has. And I think this is the first time that we're really seeing a divisive U.S. and a divisive country. And yeah, I think like we don't really know what to do for this, because it's just something that we haven't really seen before. So I've been thinking about what's causing, what at the root of all this stuff, like what's causing it. And I think it is a lot of, you see a leader just say like calling people names and not open to listening. And so at the top level, I don't think that you can really affect change. You're not going to change that person. But if we think about the citizens and the people, I think what can really affect change is in the community level. So let's say in San Diego here, if you have someone from a different race or who's an undocumented immigrant or in a different country, like talk to those people and understand like their background, learn about them. And I think that will help build a connection with people of all different sorts of backgrounds, different races, different religions. And I think it helps understand people, help understand people that you might not know. And I think a root cause of a lot of this problem is if you look at the country, I think when I was traveling, I realized this so much. So many people from other countries travel a ton. And I think the stat is like something like 70% of Americans don't have passports. And then if you look at a large part of America too, they've never left their city, their town, their state. And so when you only know one thing, it's hard to see different perspectives. And so to some extent, I don't blame some of those people because they've just known
it's what they have.
Yeah, it's one, they've known one thing their whole life. So I think the challenge for everyone is to really get outside your comfort zone, talk to people who had different experiences as you, and really learn about different people. And I think something in the back of my mind as I have these two businesses going is I want to do this on a broader scale. So I want to, like, this business idea that I have that I can't get to yet because I need to just tackle what I have in front of me. But I want to find people that are undocumented immigrants or that are of different religions or of different races and interview them and tell their story and humanize these people. So you hear so many things in the abstract. You hear like, oh, this person's from this religion, or this religion is this broadly, or this race is this broadly, but you don't really get to know the people behind these and the real people. And I think that's what causes a lot of these like negative beliefs or stereotypes. And to really be able to tell the story about individuals and humanize them and talk about their beliefs, why they believe these things, so you can connect with people through shared values or shared experiences. I think that's really how we affect change as people on a smaller level. But I think if you get enough people doing that, it can affect change broadly.
Well, and that's how real change happens. You know, it isn't always from, you know, the leadership down. It's very much often a real grassroots effort where you just get people, you know, one by one in communities and treating each other better and listening and doing all the things that you talked about and being really open in that way. I think that's a great, kind of a great way to wrap up here. It's a really, I think, thoughtful idea that you're bringing forward, and I look forward to your getting the time to execute against that. But before we go, though, I do want to give people a sense of where can they go in terms of, you know, to learn more about you, to learn about more about your two companies. You know, give us some of that.
Yeah, so Grow and Convert is our website. So we share case studies, articles on content marketing there. That'll give you a really good understanding of what we do. Then Wordable is our app. So it's wordable.io. And that's the app that helps move blog posts from Google Docs into WordPress. And then LinkedIn and Twitter, I'm pretty active on both of those places. So if someone wanted to reach out, it's Benji Haim at Benji Haim for Twitter. And then just my name, you can search for in LinkedIn and come across me.
Well, awesome. And I have to tell you, I knew, you know, I would really enjoy having you on the show. And I know that you're going to continue to do the kind of work that will kind of help make the world a better place. So thanks for that.
Thank you. Yeah. Really happy to be here. I think I like the idea of the conversation. I think going into this interview, I wouldn't have expected us to come out talking about conflict, the world, stuff like that. But I appreciate it. I think it was really interesting.
All right. Hey, you have a great time.
Yep, you too.
Thanks for joining us today. To learn more about Peer Advantage, to submit questions to Leo and our guest, and to subscribe to the Year of the Peer podcast, please visit us at leobotari.com. That's LEOBOTTARY.com. This podcast is produced by me, Randy Cantrell, hosted, of course, by Leo Bottari. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod, Vibe Ace, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.